being selected by Jenny Finch and her team for the Book of the Month is quite frankly one of the pinnacles of any writer's ambition. Don't ask me how I know this. I just do.
Hello, everybody. This month's book is The Skeleton Road by Val McDermid. The Skeleton Road is the third of Val McDermid's novels featuring DCI Karen Peary. Based in Edinburgh, Peary is called to the scene of a grisly discovery when a structural engineer discovers a skeleton hidden in one turret of an abandoned building. The skull reveals a round hole at the base, evidence of a bullet wound, and the investigation becomes a murder inquiry. With little forensic material available, Peary struggles to identify the remains until a hotel card gives a clue to the victim. Meanwhile, a war crimes unit is tasked with one last case, the capture of a Croatian general suspected of a series of revenge killings against Serbian commanders. The two investigations collide when Peary's body is identified as the unit's suspect, leaving both investigations searching for the killer. Woven around this mystery is the story of Maggie Blake, an Oxford professor who met the victim during the siege of Dubrovnik and lived with him in England when the war ended. When he disappeared 8 years ago, she was always convinced he'd returned home to Croatia. The historical aspects of the book, particularly events in Dubrovnik, are told from her point of view, and this allows the reader to build a sympathetic view of the dead general, sometimes not always achieved in a crime book.
Alan McInnesby stared out of the window at the empty green landscape the train was hurtling through. He'd never have admitted it, but in spite of the fact that he was racing towards a meeting with Wilson Cagney, all he felt was relief. He wasn't by inclination a man of action. His strength lay in interrogating the intel that passed across his desk, and making sense of it, and in building bridges with those who kept the wheels going round, not in terrorising middle-aged women. He'd hated having to do it, and hated even more being possessed by this anxiety that it was going to have terrible, unforeseen consequences for him, his continued employment, and his pension. He should never have allowed himself to be seduced by Proctor's harebrained plan, as if he was one of a pair of James Bonds. Even Proctor was acting now like the idea had been nothing to do with him. But at least he was out of the front line, and for that he was grateful. Only an hour earlier he'd been hunched over his phone in a hotel lobby, wishing he looked more nondescript. He was pretty sure there hadn't been enough light under the Jamaica Street Bridge for Maggie Blake to have seen any identifying features, and he had been wearing a beanie hat pulled down low over his ears, hiding his telltale ginger hair. But still, she'd seen him outlined against the city's glow, and she must have been traumatised by the encounter. What if his silhouette was carved on her mind's eye, clear as day? What if she stepped out of the lift and instead of walking into the breakfast room, she turned towards reception and saw him lurking there like a great fat toad? She might not have called the police the night before, but she'd sure as hell call them this morning if she saw one of her attackers hanging around her hotel lobby. He tapped his phone and sent an instant message to Proctor, who was outside the hotel in a hired car. They had no idea whether Maggie Blake would be on foot, in a taxi, or in a car driven by herself or someone from the university, so they tried to cover all the bases. McInnesby wasn't even sure why they were still following Maggie Blake. Proctor had been adamant they should stay on her trail, though. She might run to him, he said. No way, McInnesby had grumbled. If she knows where he is, she'll know how to get in touch with him without putting him in the wind. She's a middle-aged geography professor, not an asset. And he was a general in intelligence. You think he won't have drilled her in the basic business of covering his back?
A few reviews have complained the novel is too long, too complex, and has too much about the Bosnian War. But Alf found these aspects very compelling. I was fortunate enough to spend a week staying inside the walled city and explored many of the sites mentioned in The Skeleton Road. There is an excellent and deeply moving exhibition of photographs and relics from the siege in the town, and I felt McDermid's description of events reflected the spirit and suffering of Dubrovnik with great accuracy. The darkest aspects of the war in the book are fictional, but have the ring of truth about them. They are also written with care and give a more balanced view of some of the terrible events than is often the case.
Her conversation with Adam Turner had left Karen nowhere to turn except her victim's distant past. Nothing in Dimitar Petrovich's Oxford life pointed towards murder, but his history encompassed some of the bloodiest conflicts of the 20th century. It wasn't much of a reach to think the answer to his death must lie there. Persuading the macaroon of that would be the hardest part. So she'd prepared a written pitch, complete with costings. A cheap flight to Venice, train to Zagreb, then a hire car to a Croatian village in the middle of nowhere. It was almost as cheap as an overnight in London, she pointed out. She'd worry about the language barrier once she got there. In her experience, there was always a cop with good enough English to help out in an emergency. She made it sound as straightforward as a day trip to Glasgow. It was her only chance. And, miraculously, it had worked. Phil had been incredulous when she'd told him the night before she flew out. You got past that macaroon? Karen, you scare me sometimes. She laughed. It was easy. By making it a written request, it meant he didn't actually have to talk to me. Me talking to him is like in a Tom and Jerry cartoon where Tom sticks his head in a beehive and there's a whole cloud of bees buzzing around driving him totally mental. So if Macaroon can avoid that, easy peasy. I'm off to Croatia in the morning. Take care of yourself. I mean it, Karen. It's not the Wild West anymore, Phil. They're part of the EU. Aye, but there are still people there who did some seriously bad things not that long ago, and they're not going to be very happy if you poke a stick in their ribs. Karen gave an exasperated sigh. I won't be going around causing trouble. I'm just trying to get a few answers to some questions about a dead guy. No, you're not. You're looking for a murderer. I'll be fine, Phil. I'm not stupid. I can take care of myself. She had her stubborn face on now, and he knew enough to leave it. And so they left it. Her flight to Venice had departed Edinburgh on time next morning. Since she'd never been there before, she'd given herself a couple of hours' grace in the city before she had to catch her train for Zagreb. It was just long enough to make her way from Piazzale Roma to St. Mark's Square and back again. Karen wasn't as well travelled as she'd have liked, and she'd often found the reality of abroad less scintillating than the anticipation. Not so with Venice. In the end, she had to drag herself back to the station, catching her train with minutes to spare. It had been magical. She'd return with Phil, she promised herself as she emailed him a selection of the snaps she'd taken with her phone. 9 hours on a train wasn't the worst way Karen could think of to spend a day, but it was close. There was only so long you could look at scenery, but she'd had the good sense to download a string of BBC TV dramas onto her iPad, and that was enough of a distraction to fill most of the time. She'd stocked up with plenty to eat before she'd left Edinburgh, so she didn't even have to chance the train catering. But by the time the train pulled into Zagreb, Glavni Kolodvor, she was more than ready to breathe some fresh air and stretch her legs. Karen shouldered her backpack and walked through the cavernous concourse of the station, looking all around her, trying to work out where the car hire counters were. It was far too late to set off for Podravec, but she could pick up the car and head out of the city now while the traffic was quiet. She'd find a cheap hotel on the outskirts and set off properly in the morning. What she saw next made her misstep and almost clatter to the pale travertine floor. There, standing in the middle of the concourse, oblivious to everyone around her, staring up at the departure boards that flanked the entrance to the platforms, was Maggie Blake.
The Skeleton Road is often described as one of McDermid's standalone books, and it can be read as such. It is, however, also one of a series. The Distant Echo and A Darker Domain precede it, and there are now 7 books featuring Karen Peary. The Distant Echo was a recent television series, and I'm hoping the others are also to be broadcast. Whilst The Skeleton Road may prove to be too complex and costly, I would very much like to see it. Karen Peary is a smart, capable and likeable character who grew on me as I read the earlier books. Her ability is matched by a determination that is best described as bloody-minded on occasions, an admirable quality in a police officer doing her type of work. The books have been described as police procedurals, as the emphasis in a cold case is more on the techniques for solving the crime than events and consequences of the crime itself. They are much more than that, however, with a rich, well-researched background and plenty of human interest from the main characters. Whilst McDermid is chiefly known as the writer of the Tony Hill, Carol Jordan books, made famous by the television series The Wire in the Blood, this series has much to offer the reader, and I would recommend it, especially this title.
There we are, Jenny Finch in a good form as ever there. And of course, this particular entry is another one of those TV dramas, which I don't know. I mean, Rob Nichols, what did you make of this particular book? Because I've seen the TV drama, I've read the book, and I'm we'll wait and see. Any thoughts in terms of wading your way through the text?
Yeah, I thought it was it's quite timely, isn't it, for us to be looking at it now with a conflict in Ukraine. And it shows how, for us in Britain, how soon we can forget, really, about all the what happened in Yugoslavia. If you know what I mean, when it was 24 hours news, everything, we followed everything bit by bit. But as Jenny said, this is a sort of, it's fantastic that it takes the account from all different directions. It throws up lots of it takes us into some dark places. There's no doubt about it. But there's a lot of humanity through the book. I found it quite a compelling read. Jenny said about how the police officer Karen is quite driven. And the book's like that as well. It drives you through it. You basically, you pick it up and you don't want to put it down. And I thought it was really clever the way that the different plots intertwined, and you wondering how the different people investigating from different angles are going to collide, and when they collide, what's going to happen? And of course we had a situation where literally two of the characters that are lawyers actually collide with the wife in a street, don't they? As they try to take matters into their own hands. But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a gripping read. And as I say, because of events going on now in Ukraine, it makes you think. It makes you think around the subject a bit more.
Yes, it's interesting that in terms of the delivery, certainly the contemporary resonance is very much there. I suppose I was a little bit irritated at times by the number of times we had academia referenced in terms of, and there's another PhD student I need to supervise and so on, which I felt was a little bit unnecessary perhaps, but again, it worked well. Also, full disclosure, having seen TV production, the ITV production, which featured Lauren Lyle as Karen Peary, I found it very difficult to actually then square the televisual incarnation of Karen Peary with indeed the descriptor of a somewhat dumpy, overweight individual, which maybe says more about casting choices in terms of TV as opposed to anything else from that perspective. Plus, I will actually put in a full warning that the people who actually are keen on Karen Peary's not partner, but romantic connection, Phil Hatka, a big spoiler in this particular thing, which I must admit I didn't see coming, and certainly leaves us very much at the cliff edge in more ways than one about this whole side of things. Jenny, I mean, again, I've said from that point of view, I came to it having seen the TV series. You'll be pleased to know that a second series has been commissioned. We look at the figures for the first one, and it was achieving rates, which for a multi-channel world is pretty impressive, of over 4 million viewers who actually tuned in to the system. In fact, 4.82 million viewers, so it was a little under 5 million viewers from that point of view. Maybe there's another area where at times I felt, and this could be the blurring of the TV series with this particular text, I wasn't sure whether Karen was being portrayed as almost a Mary Sue character who was seen as, well, she sells it, she sells this, she sells that, she does everything, and yet we can't quite connect it together on that basis. So those were areas which I felt maybe were slight weaknesses for myself. But, you know, as a crime writer yourself, Jenny, and the world awaits certainly when some sensible Netflix or ITV people will actually start adapting your particular texts. Did you feel it actually worked in terms of the delivery of the characters and so on, given this was, I mean, again, an interesting connection between the horrendous nature of war and the fact that, as is referred to in the text, it's seen as the last war in Europe, or Europe war on European soil, which, as Rob's rightly said, sometimes we forget about.
Yes, I thought it was a very interesting place to put this drama, to actually use the Bosnian War. I had the advantage of having read the two previous texts before I read The Skeleton Road. So I had my picture firmly fixed in my head. And also, of course, this Karen Peary is a DCI, whereas she wasn't in the first one, The Distant Echo. So she has aged, and she has grown up, and maybe time has not been particularly kind to her. We never know. We may find this poor actress struggling through the next five books in a fat suit, for all we know.
It's a thought, yeah. I mean, again, the notion of how the thing was developing and how we actually see this historical crimes unit developing and working through that. I mean, Rob, wearing your historical hat, and I know you don't, you tend to deal with history, which is a long, long time ago, as opposed to just 10 or 15 years. How did you feel that was actually being developed?
Well, yeah, as I say, it's something that at the time you would watch on TV, you'd be gripped to it 24/7. I think that, to be honest, I was when the war was going on in Yugoslavia, or former Yugoslavia, I remember being in the Far East at the time, staying with my brother, and he had like 24 news channel, and it was on all the time. And I don't think I had that at that time, but it was kind of like the first 24/7 war, if you like, in the fact that we were watching it, the events, and seeing scrolling news things across the bottom. But that kind of makes it more unreal, and this is the reality. Albeit, obviously, with the actual horrendous things that are unearthed are fictional, but presumably based very much on some horrible massacres. Weirdly enough, only 2 weeks ago, I was staying in The Hague, just across the road from the Peace Palace, when we were talking about... It's mentioned quite a lot in the book that this is where the lawyers are often based, and where they try to seek justice. So I was walking around The Hague, it was very much an international city, and people staying in my hotel, I was wondering if they were part of that sort of process because they were from different countries of the world. So again, it was a kind of like resonates, and then. Yeah, we kind of knew about Dubrovnik before, and then there was the tragedy of what might happen to it, and then we lost it, the war theatre moved on, and for us here, we only found out about it really afterwards, didn't we? After the rebuilding, etc. So again, really interesting to hear the kind of testimony from what was going on within, and it made you think again of how we feared. This time last year, how we feared for the people living in Kiev, and what was going to happen to that city. And remember again, that was, we had BBC doing their news programmes at 6 o'clock from live from the rooftops in Kiev, and you would hear the air raid sirens going off and things like that. But yeah, I also enjoyed I can see that your problems here, Alex, with the academia, because it's very much your world. It's probably like you're getting these reminders from people, all this homework that you're supposed to mark, and all these dissertations that you're supposed to be guiding students through. So you just don't want it rammed through your throat when you thought you were having a rest over the summer holidays. But it was really good to go from between Scotland and to Oxford, and even the references to Morse's Oxford, having seen it on TV, and some of them being like just suburbia, Oxford suburbia, and everything. So yeah, I really enjoyed the book, which is just as well because I read it in 2 days. And but you don't really read a book in 2 days unless you enjoy it, do you? Really.
I think it certainly endorses that. I mean, again, credit to the fact that for those folk who hadn't gone to the acknowledgements, that, of course, Val McDermott did actually base one of the aspects, which I found initially did stretch credibility, but was indeed the case. The late Dr. Kathy Wilkes, philosophy fellow at St. Hilda's College, Oxford, and Professor Sue Black, head of the Centre for Anatomy and Human Identification at the University of Dundee. Kathy Wilkes, apparently a passionate exponent of the clandestine teaching of philosophy behind the Iron Curtain and the dying years of the Soviet regime, also caught up in the siege of Dubrovnik and worked tirelessly on behalf of the city and its inhabitants. That's a story which I was totally unaware of, to be absolutely honest. I mean, you know, which again, mainstream media didn't cover the fact that, you know, this was going on, which initially when reading it, I thought, yeah, sure, you're not going to get an academic actually stay behind doing sort of clandestine teaching and continuing those things going. Mm-hmm. But apparently you do, and you did, and you carry on that sort of basis. I mean, Jenny, you've also got a scholarly background. I mean, did you feel that actually worked? I mean, the other issue, which again, a minor issue, I did feel that she managed to hop on a plane to Croatia and Oxford relatively straightforwardly. Maybe that's because she built the kind of credibility, because after all, in the first adventure that we have for Karen Perry, she's hoying off to all parts of the Highlands as well from that sort of point of view. So there we go. We're just waiting, Jenny. Any thoughts on the sort of the scholarly aspects from yourself?
Yes, I knew the story of the underground universities because when I went to Dubrovnik, I went because Jackie was invited to give a paper at the centre just outside the walls of Dubrovnik, which had been the basis for this university. And I met several of the people who were involved with it. And I thought it was just an absolutely wonderful story. I do feel that the professor is really allowed to hop around and go to all kinds of places just when she wants to. Oh, I might have stayed teaching at the university or the college if that were the case. Very much has got a kind of academic freedom that I think people haven't got now. But I think there have been a lot more strictures and a lot more pressure to deliver just the basics on academics than there were at the time she was that she's referencing here.
This is true. I see no reference whatsoever to EIG, which is the clear buzzword, economic income generation. Every academic is not good enough to be delivering your work. You've got to be bringing in profit for the university as well. So, you know, again, yeah. I could understand if she was charging for those lessons in Croatia, but clearly not.
Yes. And what's more, not charging the university for Croatian lessons.
Precisely, precisely. This is a classical thing. Rob, favourite characters? Anybody stood out for yourself in terms of the notion? I mean, to me, the lead male, the Croatian general, who of course is murdered up until a certain point, and there's a key point here. You sort of think, well, he's a hero, he's a good guy, etc. And then, of course, we get the notion that actually, there in war, there's no such thing as heroes, arguably. We all have issues that come to the fore.
That are deeper and deeper set. And are we all capable of the same sort of revenge? And that's a question that's asked through the book. I know I'm going away from your question. It's a question that's asked through the book, that could we do the comparison with the sectarianism in Scotland, and how far could that go if the circumstances
or indeed our experience with the IRA and indeed the Orange Brigades and so on in Jenny's current country, Ireland?
Well, absolutely, and of course the fact that they're basically the same people living across the street from each other, and they're finding some sort of demarcations between families. But I suppose the hope in the book is, and I think that's where you like the general because he's looking to the future, isn't he? He's trying to look for hope, a new future that changes all that, that wipes away these family feuds and people looking back 40 years in a way that, as you were saying, people in Ireland might look back to the 17th century, I suppose, and the same in former Yugoslavia, looking back to things, looking back to like medieval times or whatever, and I don't think you can't say hold a grudge, but
particularly interesting because obviously Croatia, I think its entire population is smaller than that of Scotland, which is why people often said how amazing it has been for Croatia to do so well on the footballing scene.
Yeah.
You know, admittedly, they still have yet to win a trophy and obviously lost to Spain in the recent European finals from that point of view. But you have this interesting line here where the whole of the former Yugoslavia, which was the name we used to use for the whole of them, the former Yugoslavia, was kind of held together and suppressed under both the totalitarian Soviet regime, but also under President Tito. And there was always that sense when Tito actually went, then suddenly you get all of the things that the author successfully manages to really bring out, all of those long-held grievances and gripes suddenly emerge in what sadly becomes atrocity-driven material. I'll throw in my favourite character, what the hell. I think Mint, otherwise known as Detective Murray, is vastly underrated. And again, this may be because I've seen the TV series and so on, and I feel that, you know, his nice but dim incarnation is such. But he very much actually, for me, actually epitomizes the Dr. Watson to Piri Sherlock Holmes. I think that's the kind of connection that we have there. So I'd go for DCI Murray, aka Mint, of course, for clear reasons. Rob, yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And he gets the job done. And he follows leads that he's given and actually does the work, doesn't he? And yeah, he could be a bit long suffering, but he takes it on the chin.
On the back of which Karen Piri picks up all the kudos. I mean, she's not fair.
Yes, but she wants him on a team, doesn't she? And he's grateful for the fact that he's always there. She never leaves him behind.
Yeah, that's true. But then again, you know, it's like Brian Clough and Peter Taylor, but never, and that all ended in tears. Who knows? Anyway, your favourite character, Rob?
Well, I suppose the lead characters, really, Karen and Maggie, I suppose, are the for me.
They could have been friends in another reality. They could have been friends. But
and obviously, they shared a part of the journey together in later in the book, and you're right, they could have been were thrown together. They should have been adversaries, but they found quite a lot from each other, didn't they? So they were very rounded characters from very different worlds in every way, but in the end there was a lot in common, sadly.
Including a love of the Ridley Scott movie Alien. But that's another elementary line for another time. Jenny, what about your favourite character? Are you going to stick with Karen Piri, or are you going to shock us by saying somebody completely different?
Karen Piri is a very good character, and Mint is lovely. I do like Mint. I think in some ways I like, not necessarily like Maggie Blake, but I think the level of naivety with which she began this journey and the way she reacts all the way through as she finds out more and more, I think gives an extra depth and highlights aspects of the story that we might have missed otherwise. You can see her grow up from almost a starstruck girl who has no idea how dangerous the stuff is that she's doing into someone who is very much aware and still has the guts to go back. And as you say, she and Karen Piri make a good pair, or would have made a very good pair. Mm. So I will go for Maggie Blake. As a character, I think she's very well used.
I still think it's worth an honourable mention for Tessa Minogue, if only for actually highlighting that they actually could have been called Danny or indeed Kylie, and she should have been so lucky. But still, I'm just wondering, because Val McDermott tends to actually drop in a lot of these popular cultural references. I was wondering whether she had, you know, the Minogues in mind, not necessarily being, I think, as far as I'm aware, a popular surname for UN ambassadors and lawyers and solicitors. But there we are. Okay, we've come around to scores on the doors. Rob, what are you going to go for as far as a mark out of 10 for The Skeleton Road?
I will go for 8.5, Alex.
And I'm going for 8, actually, for the slight reservations I had. Jenny, I suspect you might go higher. What's your score?
No, I'm going to go 8.5 as well. I like it, but I don't think it's absolutely brilliant.
And there we have it, The Skeleton Road, which I'm sure we'll probably see a televised version of probably somewhere around about 2028 at the current rate of the way in which ITV produce the materials and so on. Next month, what's the title, Jenny? Where should we be going? I believe it's down the line of Buckingham Palace and more.
Oh, yes. Something a bit more lighthearted and with a definite touch of naughtiness. Next month, we're looking at William Cole's book, Palace Rogue.